Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the MC Universe, where the Lorehounds, your guides to the multiverse and beyond. I'm David.
And I'm Jean, and this is our reaction podcast to The Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3. To help us break down the movie, we're going to be joined by John and Alicia.
We're going to spend a few minutes at the top of the episode with some spoiler-free opinions about the film before moving into a fuller, spoiler-filled discussion of how this movie stacks up as a major capstone of the larger MCU franchise.
If you have questions, comments, fan theories, industry news, or anything you want to share with us, drop us a note. Send us feedback to mcu@thelorehounds.com or head over to our website at thelorehounds.com and use the contact form or record a voicemail, and we will get to those on the next podcast.
We're also coming up on our 1-year podcasting anniversary, on July 11th, to be exact. And we're on a Patreon membership drive. We want to break 100 subscribers by the end of July. Stick around to the end of the podcast for more information about the thank you gift that we're going to be sending to everyone and more news about our Patreon benefits as well and our programming schedule for the rest of May.
And if you have a moment, we'd like to invite you to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Ratings and reviews help other folks find our podcast, which helps us make more podcasts.
I know we're going to get into more programming notes at the end, but I just wanted to make a couple of quick announcements. First, the new Apple TV show Silo, our very own Alicia, who's going to be joining us shortly, has her own new podcast called Wool Shift Dust. Go check that out. She's going to be dropping episodes weekly. John and I were just on Electric Boogaloo with Maester Anthony talking about a Tyrion chapter of Clash of Kings. And you can find that on the Bald Move Hot D feed. And our next Earthsea episode is coming out on the Tombs of Atuan and the Silmarillion stories. Both of those are coming out later this month. So stay tuned. We'll have more information at the end of the podcast. Okay, Jean, let's welcome John and Alicia to the show. Hey, guys.
Good welcome. To see you.
Hello. Hello.
It's nice an to honor to be invited on the Lorehounds podcast.
Wait, who invited this guy?
Thank you for accepting.
I don't know how I ended up here.
You're a hard get. Thank you for accepting.
Graced with greatness.
That's right. And Alicia, last time you were able to drop in on us and bring a death pool with you, so we're definitely going to touch on that. Yeah.
That went well.
That was an interesting one. Really, really. So for our listeners, normally it's Jean and I covering the MCU stuff, and this time we decided to do a little Lorehounds Assemble kind of thing. So we're going to have a 4-way conversation about the movie, And if this works out, you know, we will see if John can handle any more MCU related stuff. We'll see if he wants to come back.
No comment.
Right. But I think for the major films, like when we have a big reaction or something like that, we might do more of this multiple host thing. So hopefully it's fun for everyone. It's fun for us. I mean, Alicia, you've got such a command of the MCU lore as well as Jean. So it's really great to have two perspectives at the level that you guys have of the knowledge. Yeah, so future MCU plans. We're definitely going to be talking about Spider-Man, the next Spider-Man, the Morales movie coming up. It's across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Getting it confused, yep. Right?
Yep. Miles Morales.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So we want to definitely talk about that. John is iffy. We'll see whether he wants to come on, but I definitely want to talk to you two about that. So we're probably going to do a shorter prep podcast on that just to get some context to it, set it up, and then definitely we'll be back for a post-release, maybe about a week after the release, once everyone's had a chance to see it, and we'll break down that movie there. So without much else, I think let's get into our spoiler-free quick round robin, our hot takes on the movie. Alicia, let's start with you. What did you think overall?
Overall, I would say, I mean, it sounds weird to say that I was happy with a movie that made me so, so sad, but but I would say, you know, I thought it was a solid, good conclusion to the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy. This is definitely by far my favorite trilogy personally in the MCU.
Wow, okay.
And, you know, I love all three movies. Now, maybe this is a recency bias, but I would currently place this new movie second in between one and two.
Interesting. And would one be one and
yes.
two be three?
So it'd be okay. Like 1-3-2 ranking. Yeah.
Got it. All right. So you really enjoyed it. Is there anything in particular that you enjoyed? The production values, the plot, the character stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think just, okay, so I'm an animal lover, so they really got me with that whole plot line.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
And the character design of those characters, too, was just, it was so hard to watch, but also so, like, beautiful. And they really got me from the beginning where they came through and that, you know, they show Rocket and they follow him with, like, this close, low-angle shot. And they keep reusing this close, low-angle shot over and over throughout the movie. Okay. And it just made everything feel more personal and visceral. But I do, mm-hmm. I do have to say, we'll get into it later. But in the middle a little bit, you know, I felt like it dragged on a little bit with the repetitive action in the middle. I will give that critique.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Jean, where are you at?
Yeah, it was cool.
That's a bit understated.
It was a cool movie.
Okay. All right.
You guys know going into it, I was not a huge fan of the Guardians and particularly one character.
Yeah. Right. Well, we'll get into that.
But again, I thought the movie was cool. I don't think it was... I get why other people seem to really love it.
Uh-huh.
Because they love these characters.
Right.
I don't have that attachment to these characters.
Right.
Okay.
So watching the film, I was just able to detach myself. Mm-hmm. A little bit more because the characters were not, I wasn't too invested in their outcomes. And, right. And I think for me, that's been the overall theme with Guardians. Like, it never pulled me into caring enough about each character to see what happens to them at the end.
Okay.
And since this is the end of that story, it was just cool for me.
All right.
Okay.
What did you think about it from a MCU standpoint in terms of, I didn't feel like it was very loaded with setting up new characters. I mean, we set up the new, we won't talk about it, but in other movies, it feels like they're just packing it full of five or six different characters that are going to be in spinoffs. And I didn't feel that in this movie.
They did.
They did.
They did.
Okay.
Yeah, they snuck them in there. Yeah.
Yeah. They absolutely. Absolutely.
I didn't feel like it. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they really did. They introduced some characters that are probably going to be really important for the future of the MCU. Okay. We'll talk about those.
Yeah, when we get on the other side of the spoiler warning.
Yeah.
Production-wise, how did you feel?
It was great. There was there's one scene that I think is might be my favorite scene in the MCU movies.
Okay, cool. Well, I look forward to talking about
really
that.
That one particular scene.
Wait, can I ask? Is it a fight? Is it a fight scene?
It is.
Okay, I think
It is. It was so well done.
Yeah.
It almost brought me to thinking about how, you know, action movies are done in Hong Kong and that sort of visceral, like, wow, like this is badass. That was that scene.
Okay.
So nice. Yes.
Cool.
Production was great. A1 production.
Would you have rather watched it at home, or did you not mind spending your $10 at the theater?
I didn't mind it.
Okay. All right.
I didn't mind it.
Cool. All right.
It's a watch for me either way. It was
fine that you went out. Yeah.
Cool. It was fine.
Right. John, over to you. What's your hot take on the movie?
You know, you make me go after positive takes. I don't want to bring it down too much, though. I did not hate it. I don't want to come out and be like, it was the worst movie I ever saw. It was decent, right? It was a decent movie. I had a fun night out. The production looked beautiful. The mix of practical effects and CGI was a really good balance. The parts of the plot were really great. Some things that were in the past, I think, were better than things that were in the present. And I think that I'm where Jean is, where, and for different reasons, because Jean, you are very tied to the MCU. And so you know a lot of these characters, and you love a lot of these characters, but these specific set of characters, that's not your group.
Right.
For me, I think I'm so detached from like what's been happening in the MCU that even though I loved these characters in the first two movies, like Guardians 2 was probably my favorite MCU movie ever.
Wow.
And I come back and it's been years and I haven't really kept up. And I'm like, I don't think this is an emotional grip on me anymore. You know, I was having trouble really like connecting with the characters and connecting with the greater plot. It just after Endgame, I felt like I don't know if I care about the stakes anymore. And that's where they've been. I've not been able to woo myself back into the MCU. And this movie did not bring me back in. It did not make me go, I need to see every MCU movie that ever comes out. Yeah, but it was a good movie. You know, it was a well-made movie. The plot made sense. It was decent. The humor largely landed. The soundtrack, I would say, is the weakest of the three, but still decent. And I would recommend a watch. I would recommend people watch it. It's just, I think, not my thing anymore.
When we were talking about it, John, I asked you, you expressed these doubts about whether the MCU was for you anymore. And I asked you about some specific titles and you haven't watched them yet. So I don't know if we can like do a challenge sometime to get you to watch the ones we think you'll like the best.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay.
That's a great idea.
Maybe I'm just not watching the things that are for me. Yeah, the whole MCU thing, the movie part, I think, has just become a fatigue thing for me of... There was literally a moment, and I could say what it was later, where I knew what the next line was, and in my head, I said it word for word, and then I was right.
Right.
And I said, okay, these movies are just becoming so formulaic. You know, it's not that I'm tired of superheroes. I'm tired of being told the same structure of story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I wish that they would take a risk and diverge from that a little bit. And they did take some, they did some things that were a little different. And we could talk about that too later, but I don't think that it was different enough where I'm going, wow, that's an interesting story. That I didn't walk home thinking I learned something about the human experience today. I walked home thinking that was a flashy, fun movie.
Right.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, I think you should watch Loki and Werewolf by Night.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
But Werewolf by Night. Yeah, especially Werewolf by Night. Oh, just any classic horror fan who hasn't watched it needs to stop after this podcast, needs to go watch it immediately.
I was going to say, I'm busy right now. I'm trying to record.
We've also got Secret Invasion, which could be a departure from the normal storytelling.
Right.
We'll see. because they promised us a lot in the first round of television shows, and a lot of those didn't deliver what was expected. So hoping they learned some lessons from the previous round and are really going to give us some. So we just got to wait and see.
On that note, there was an interview that Samuel L. Jackson did that I picked up on today, where he says that this Secret Invasion TV show ties in Phase 3 with Phase 5.
Interesting.
Okay.
So there might be something more heavy, hardy for us to sink our teeth into with this TV show. So hopefully, and to John's point about the movies, I think the TV shows have done a pretty good job of continuing the story in a way that the movies have not.
Yeah. Interesting.
The TV shows seem to, you know, Werewolf by Night aside, which of course that also debuted on Disney Plus. So maybe there's more freedom there, but I found, there's been more invention on that side of things.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely.
But that's back good to know. And you know, I try to think of it as Star Wars too, because God knows the Star Wars films are not perfect by any means. And if you just watch the movies, other than just the original trilogy, I think you're going to have a bad time.
Right.
But if you watch all that supplemental stuff and you start to really make those connections, now you're going to have a better time, I think. And
absolutely.
And maybe it's just that, you know, I have more nostalgia and hype for Star Wars. And so I'm able to overlook some silliness and some formulaic stuff.
You mean like reusing sound effects over and over? And
oh, my God. It's the same universe, David. But anyway, I think I just don't have enough nostalgia for the MCU to be to overlook that in my, like, nostalgia is a valid ingredient to entertainment.
Right.
We talk about member berries and stuff like that, but nostalgia, making people feel something based on something that they loved as a kid, that's a valid form of entertainment, and that's a valid ingredient to a film. And that's fine. It's just that nostalgia only works on those who knew it back in the day. And before Iron Man, before watching those movies, I didn't really know much about Marvel Comics besides Spider-Man. So yeah, I think it's just not, it's just a universe that I think still has promise and still has potential. And if I wanted to get really into it, I probably could. I'm at the point where, like, there's so many fandoms and there's so many things to go into. This is lowest on my list of things I want to get into.
Yeah, I feel like that's the major problem that the MCU and Star Wars and many other properties is facing right now, is people are just fatigued in general, because every time anything is any sort of success, they're like, oh, let's make 20 more of the same.
Right. And, it's a verse now.
Yeah.
It's a verse. Everything it's the Mando-verse.
Yeah. Like, I can't even keep up on, you know, other things like Drag Race or something, because it's just too many iterations.
And then you get like with HBO saying, oh, we're going to reboot the Harry Potter franchise. You're like, please, dear God, no.
You know? Well, especially
for a lot of reasons.
Hold on now. Hold on.
Setting those issues aside, just in terms of another IP coming at us. Yeah, that's for sure. So, John, would you are you glad you spent your $10, or would you have preferred to have watched this at home?
I probably would have just watched this at home.
Yeah.
If I knew what it was, I'll be honest. I would have enjoyed it at home. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. Again, I think it's a well-made movie, and I'm sorry if I brought this down a little bit.
No. I think everybody had a good time with it. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people will have a good time seeing this movie. I think if you are in on the MCU, if you are still hyped for these characters, you're going to love this movie. I want to say that.
Yeah.
I've been seeing celebrity tweets where they're like, I was crying through the whole thing, and I was like, man, why? I wish I liked this that much. You know what I mean? I wish I had that kind of emotional bond with these characters with this universe, and I just don't. And I don't know. It's a lot of work to get there. So I probably will not be doing that work. I have too much on my plate right now. But I think that we've harped enough on my nonsense with this, my grumpiness about the MCU.
No, I will say that I'm not fatigued. I'm not fatigued. I think.
We had some chit chat about it on our Discord about this too.
Yeah, we did.
About film fatigue.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm fatigued. I think to your point, John, is what type of stories are they telling, right?
Are they ones that are an hour too long?
Those too, right? Definitely. And that's the rub. You know, you want better stories out of what we're seeing. You want to be able to be engaged in characters that, you know, maybe you don't have a lot of affinity for, but you want to find that affinity. And I think that's why I keep going back, because I know those characters. And to your point, you didn't know those characters. You didn't know Iron Man. You knew Spider-Man, right?
Right.
For someone like me.
And I still love the Spider-Man movies. Like, I saw No Way Home, and I was so hype. Tobey Maguire shows up. I'm just, you know, hands in the air, like, my boy, he's back.
Right, right.
And so, that, like I said, like, nostalgia is a valid ingredient.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad that you can enjoy that. I'm glad that you can have your nostalgia cocktail, Jean. You know, I mean, it's a quality drink if you have the ingredient.
Yeah, and I think the ingredients are definitely still there. They need a little bit more spice, but they're still there.
I mean, but John, didn't you say you liked the first two Guardians movies?
And, I did.
And that, I assume you didn't have any prior attachment to the characters then, right?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I liked the first two, and I think it might be part of, you know, I was less fatigued on the MCU. I had seen fewer MCU movies, and so I'd seen that formula fewer times. Again, like, I think that it's not the characters that are the problem. It's the formulaic approach. And maybe that's just what they want to do, right? Maybe they just know that if they do the formulaic approach, they're going to please enough people to break that budget, to you know, the kids are going to come, they're going to have fun seeing their favorite characters, and if the adults want a stronger story, if they want an Andor, they're going to have Secret Invasion, and that's fine too. You know,
it could be
the same thing as Star Wars, and I say this on Star Wars, and I'm a big prequel apologist and whatnot, and, you know, it's a universe, not a genre. Like, you can have different stories in the same universe that are for different audiences, and that's valid, and you don't have to have everyone like every single thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The one thing I'll critique the MCU on that point is, though, they rely too much on everybody seeing every single thing. Whereas Star Wars does not as much.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
You could have watched Mandalorian without seeing Rebels or Clone Wars or anything like that. Yep. Andor completely standalone. Yeah.
That's fair. Definitely. David.
Yeah. You've
been quiet.
Think?
Yeah, I've been over here silent.
You've been
I think
quiet.
It was interesting walking out of the theater, and I immediately started hitting up a few podcasts that I know that I follow that are going to have, you know, takes on these. There was a lot of there was a rush. There's a whole bunch of podcasts right out on the first day, which is handy. And so, you know, I was curious to see what other people were saying, and I was like, wow, people are really loving this movie. Why do I feel differently?
Did you listen to The Ringer?
I did. I listened to the Midnight Boys Hot Takes, and I know Joanna and Mal were doing a deep dive, and I started to listen to that one. I checked out Bald Move to see what Jim and Aaron had to say. And then I've listened to a few other, you know, here and there, just reading little headlines here and there.
Because Mallory on The Ringer is who I was referring to, and I hear people talk about weeping through this movie, you know, crying through this movie.
I wept through, I mean, not the entire movie, but I wept, yeah.
Yeah, that was one of them I was talking about. Florence from Florence and the Machine also was another one who was like, I was crying for the whole thing. And I was like, man, guys, I need some of this. I need some of this attachment.
And that's how I was kind of feeling walking out. In a way, on that test of, you know, was I glad to have paid for the movie? Not really. I think I would have much rather have just watched it at home on streaming. I think part of that too, I'm going to just caveat a little bit, was the screen that I saw it on. And this happened to me before with a previous, I think, Marvel's movie. Oh yeah. With the most recent Black Panther movie. The screen quality is just not great. And MCU is getting so good now that you really do need a clean, bright screen to see the detail and to really appreciate what they're doing with the CGI and the action and everything. That said, I felt the movie was too long. I felt the movie relied on too many tropes. And I was really disappointed in each individual character, what was going on and what we didn't get. out of it, which we got to kind of wait till we get into the spoilers because I don't want to blow anything for anybody. So I was disappointed in some of the choices they made. And I think the last thing for me was I'm very tired of how some big bad characters are handled. I thought one of the brilliant things about Thanos and the portrayal of Thanos was he was hyper intelligent. He was cool as a cucumber. He had a plan. He was sticking to it. And he, they portrayed him as somebody who believed in their cause without being a crazy zealot. And I really didn't appreciate that portrayal. I don't have a deep history like Alicia and Jean do. I'm similar to John, just being a more casual fan. So for me, the movie didn't work. I didn't feel the sense of closure and nostalgia, you know, for James Gunn, you know, passing on his legacy. So yeah, for me, the movie was a miss. Had I watched it at home on streaming, I absolutely would have watched it at home on streaming. Walking home from the theater, I was a little like, not my favorite movie. And some people are super hype for this movie and I just don't get that same vibe. And I kind of wish I did because I really wanted to enjoy this movie. I did really enjoy Guardians 1. Guardians 2, not so much. And so I was really hoping for something very cool. And yeah, it just was a little bit of a miss for me. So
Fair.
Yeah.
All different opinions. I'll hold down the fort for the lovers of
yes. film. Well, I love it. We've got a spectrum.
We've got a really perfect spectrum.
Yeah. Cool. It truly is the Avengers assembling.
Absolutely.
Right. All right, everyone. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into our spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen the movie yet at this point and you don't want to be spoiled, take this ad break as your chance to jump out, go see the movie, come back. We'll still be here for you. But on the other side of this, we're going to deep dive and talk about the legacy, James Gunn's legacy at Marvel.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And we're back. Okay, so let's get into some spoiler-filled conversations. First off, Alicia, the last time you were on the MCU podcast, you had a very ingenious idea to have a little bit of Deadpool to see who was going to make it out alive and who is not going to make it out alive from this movie. And what's the results of our Deadpool here?
They got us good.
They got us good. They got us good.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a pre-conversation about this that I'm not a huge fan of fake out deaths, so that would be one of my areas of critique. And I had to think of you, Jean, about how close Peter came.
So close. It almost happened. Almost happened.
Don't get me started on the Leia one, because that one would have been just a beautiful closure to, you know, because to Carrie Fisher's life. Like, why let this woman? Anyway, back to this. But yeah, so let's see. So if we run down it real quick. I said Gamora, like 25%. And indeed, she did not die. She had an interesting character arc, one of my favorites. So we'll get into that later. And let's see. And then we had Peter. Yeah, not dead. Not only not dead, post-credit scene returning.
Will return.
And then let's see. And then we had Rocket. I gave 50-50. And of course, yeah, the entire movie was about whether or not he will die. And frankly, that one I'm very relieved about. And then we had the High Evolutionary, very close, but it looks like they're going to keep him around. And so, yeah. And so then we have Drax, who, yes. I said 100% certainty going to die. Yeah. And he didn't even come close.
No, he came close. He got shot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't come as close as others, I guess. Yeah.
I thought he was dead in that moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Every time one of the main characters took a shot or something happened to him, I was pretty sure, okay, is this it? Or I wasn't sure, but that's where I got engaged. The Rocket backstory and then Who's Gonna Die, that's where I found myself constantly being engaged. And at the end, when Quill made it back, I was pretty upset at that point. His face distorted, and I thought, okay, this is it. And we're going to have this big send off and it's really going to mean something. And there was real stakes involved here. He gave his life for his friend. He gave his life to save all these other people. And I was going to be like, yes. And then they didn't. And it was Glenn crawling out from underneath the dumpster and in Walking Dead. Oh, spoilers. Sorry. This is a spoiler filled conversation. It was, for me personally, that was the moment I was really let down by this film.
Yeah, I thought the same at that moment. Like, I wasn't rooting for, jokes was drawn aside. I wasn't rooting for Peter to die.
Sure,
I was.
But in that exact moment, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be, Peter's actually going to be the one. And that's actually kind of beautiful and da da da. But also, I have to say, the moment that he was separated from the rest of them, I was like, oh, Adam's just going to come save him. And then and then they got me. I was like, oh, maybe Adam's not going to. There he is.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought too, I was like, no, you fool. Don't go back for the, the little iPod player. And then, oh, but that's the thing that's going to end him is him reaching back for his music, for this nostalgia. For me, that would have been a really bittersweet moment that would have put this film into another space, would have put it into an Avenger Endgame quality film, where there were real stakes and people did pay the cost. They paid the iron price. Well, that's the wrong.
His 200-year-old grandpa is still alive. Come on, guys. We can't kill a single person. No,
it's crazy.
There will be no grief in this movie. Yeah. I'll be honest. We got 10 minutes into the movie. Rocket is, mortally wounded. And I immediately thought, nobody's dying in this movie.
I did too.
I was like, they're not going to do it. That, to me, that's like, the minute they started playing with, is he going to die or not? I was like, okay, nobody's dying in this movie.
I never felt when Quill is out in space and his face is getting bloated and the ice is starting to form for a few seconds. I thought, yes, my dreams are coming true. This is about to happen. And I can't really believe it's about to happen, but it's about to happen.
And then
they took that away from you.
They just snatched it all away from me. But I never felt like any. That was the only moment that I had in the movie where I felt someone might die.
Can we take a moment to appreciate the makeup in that scene? I mean, I guess it was probably makeup and CGI together, but that was, just also like we were just comparing it to, the Star Wars version with Leia. But here you actually see, real science being put into the makeup about how the face distorts and swells. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would last that long in space.
Well, he's a guy. He's
part celestial.
Yeah.
Yeah, but didn't he lose all his powers? Wasn't that a thing?
But he still has a heartier, that's the reason why he was able able to help him take the Infinity Stone in the first movie. Right. So.
He could have survived a little bit longer.
All right. Whatever y'all say.
But I just never felt anyone was going to bite it.
Right.
If I never see Chris Pratt in another movie, it will still be too many movies that he's in.
Yeah.
I'm tired of him and his stupid flannel and his stupid signs and tweets and just get out of here. You were mean to Anna Faris and you should go away.
Yeah, I don't. Put him in a box of Nate. I don't like his personal life, but he does play like the man child Star Lord well. And I said, I know Jean, this type of character annoys you, but I love I love a good man child. You know?
Oh, I like the character too. I actually really like Peter Quill. Yeah. I just wish somebody else played him.
Yeah, fair.
Well, Alicia, thank you so much for setting up that Deadpool for our last episode, and I'm glad that we got to have some fun with it a little bit. All right, so let's move on then a little bit in our conversation and talk about some of the other parts of the film. I think it might be interesting to dig into the production a little bit and the music, since those two things are a little bit tied together. Jean, what did you think of the CGI and the production values? I know we talked a little bit about on the
CGI. Yeah. The production was really on point. I think my favorite character portrayal was Groot.
Okay.
I think he looked
good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The Adam Warlock scene, mm-hmm. when we first see him flying through space.
Mm-hmm. That was cool.
I absolutely love that.
Okay. Cool.
That's one of my favorite scenes in like recent Marvel movies.
Okay.
Just him flying through space, and I forgot what song was playing.
Oh yeah,
I want to say it was maybe Creep or Crazy. No, it's Crazy on You.
Okay,
I think it was Crazy on You by Heart.
Okay, yeah, I was.
Right.
I was.
So that song is playing, and he's flying through space, and you're like, "Who is this golden man? Where's he going? Where's he headed?" I just love the whole aesthetic of that particular scene. And then Groot, again, I just loved how he looked, how he moved. Everything about the look of the movie was fantastic.
It was really interesting. They did a lot with camera angles too. Like Alicia, you were saying before, with that low point of view with Rocket and some other stuff. What was some other standout stuff for you, Alicia?
Well, I have to say, I thought that Jean was, when I asked if it was a fight scene, I thought you were going to talk about the hallway fight at the end.
Yes.
So anything with the music though, Alicia, or the production?
Yeah, really so James Gunn, he basically, I love music personally, and I have all these playlists on Deezer, and James Gunn just goes basically into my classic rock playlist and picks songs and alt rock playlists and just like picks songs to put in his movies. So thank you, James Gunn.
Right.
I mean, I do. Yeah, I think that's the thing. I've heard from some people that they aren't a huge fan of his style of music. And so it seems like it's hit or miss. But for me, it's very much like exactly what I like. And Florence and the Machine's one of my favorite things. If you like ask my friends, like, what's one of Alicia's karaoke songs, and like Dog Days. So nice. So I was like singing and dancing along, you know? Yeah.
You know, my wife is a huge fan of Florence and the Machine. And, you know, as spouses do, we poke fun at each other's little musical taste every now and then. And what I always say in Dog Days Are Over, and I like the song, why does she sing like a siren in part of it? She's like, ooh, wee, ooh, wee, ooh, wee. It's like an ambulance. Other than that, I really like the song. And I thought that was my favorite musical pick of the movie.
My cats hate when I sing Florence and the Machine. They come running and think I'm in pain.
Nice. It's like, it's just such a strange choice in the middle. And it works, but it's just like, it's a siren singing.
John, music-wise, you're our resident musician here, actual musician. Was anything that jumped out for you?
Yeah, but I don't listen to music anymore.
Oh, really?
it became a job to me, and so I basically don't listen to music anymore. Okay. I do sometimes. If I'm like trying to get in the zone on a project or something like that, sure. But I grew up with this kind of music, with the classic rock stuff. My dad was super into it, so it reminds me. I have the nostalgia for that. That works for me. This was a decent soundtrack. I thought it was the weakest of the three.
Okay. Ooh. Okay. All right.
I thought the second one had the best soundtrack.
Interesting.
I thought the first one was second best. This is the weakest soundtrack. And that might just be I didn't know as many of the songs.
Right.
You know? But also, I did think that the choreography matched the music better in the other movies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, I think that would be my critique on the music here. It was still a decent soundtrack. It still has better music than any of the other Marvel movies. So, kudos to James Gunn for putting that together.
Right. I think for me, the one thing that blew me away right from the start was the CGI detail. And when they were showing all the little raccoons in the cage, the movements, the sounds, it was very realistic. It wasn't that uncanny valley of, oh, this is bad CGI and they don't really have these animalistic movements down. The fur, the detail of the fur and the natural layer, I was like, I was blown away at the quality and just the rendering process, the processors that had to render that. You know, I mean, that's some real crypto mining sort of level server farms that they must be running this through. But I was really impressed with that. And visually, I think across the film, it looked good. It was very, it read very Guardians for me, even when they were in the multicolored lifesaver space suit, you know, space suits flying across into the, into the ortho, whatever factory that was. I apologize. I don't remember the name of it.
The Goop Factory.
Or Go Corp.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's. Right? Oh. That's the joke everybody's saying.
Does it smell like a vagina candle?
Oh, oh my God.
So, yeah, I thought visually it was great. I mean, that was one of the things that I did enjoy about the film overall was the visual look of it. Musically, it didn't grab me as strong. I was kind of expecting it. And so when they were dropping... When the Beastie Boys, you know, dropped in, I was like, oh, okay, you know, they're trying to pull me on the nostalgia, and I wasn't as on the nostalgia train as everybody else. All of that said, though, the film had some different tonalities that I noticed, and one of the things that I really noticed was the evil Tim Burton aspect of Rocket in the cage with the high evolutionary. Alicia, you said you're a bit of an animal. You know, that's one of the things that got you. How did you react to this kind of horror? It's a very horror scope kind of setup.
I really did. I mean, I'm a huge fan of horror movies, too. And that's immediate.
Okay.
That's
so you press your buttons right away.
But that's exactly. Well, I mean, but it is also it's a hard watch for an animal lover, especially because of these like hyper realistic, you know, CGI, as you said, you're especially that walrus. You're just thinking like, oh. What kind of painful life is that? And even like, you know, Lila with her arms and stuff, I kept looking at that and be like, what did they do to her little arms? but it made it hit that much harder, you know, like they really pressed my buttons there, but it's a hard watch for animal lovers too.
Right. John, did you react at all to the animal scenes?
Yeah, they were great. But before I get to the animals and get to the CGI Encounter Earth, I did not enjoy the soundtrack.
You did not? Okay. All right.
I did not. A lot of the songs are songs that I listen to over and over again. I have to keep reminding myself when I watch a Guardians movie that his foray into music was what was left by his mom for him, right?
Originally, right.
So in Volume 1. Right. Yeah. Right, so I have to keep that in my frame of thought, because a lot of the most popular music of that time is never in the Guardians movie.
Mm.
So there's no rap music, there's no hip hop, there's no up rock, there's no you barely get a Michael Jackson,
right? Mm.
You know, so there's a lot of cultural things, signifiers for me, that are not present in the soundtrack.
Interesting.
And it makes it leaves a hole for me that I have to, like, I have to sit, you know, in the movie, I'm like, yeah, okay, he's listening to this. And when they played the Beastie Boys, I'm like...
yeah, really? Yeah.
Really?
Get me the least hip hop you can find.
You're gonna and don't get me wrong, the Beastie Boys have great songs. No Sleep to Brooklyn is not one of the great songs for me.
No, it's just the most famous song. That's all it is.
It works thematically there, though. I think that's why
it absolutely does. And I think there are a whole lot of other songs that could have worked as well.
Fair.
Are these just James Gunn's personal playlists that he gets to shovel into the movies?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But I just, yeah, maybe that's also, Jean, you make a good point, you know, that this is the music Peter gets from his mom. I think it's also, Beastie Boys aside, the music that I got from my mom. So that might be another reason why I love it.
Yeah, nostalgia, like John said earlier, that nostalgia is a really important part, especially with Guardians of the Galaxy, because of Peter's relationship with his mother and all of that. That was his shtick, at least in volume one, right?
Right. And I have to I hate that I have to remind myself of that.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Right. You know what I mean? When I'm watching the movie, even on playback, I have to remind myself, oh, this song is playing. I'm like, all right, he got it from. I understand where he got it from. And these are songs that I listen to. These are songs that my friends know who grew up in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's not something that's foreign to, you know, my cultural background. Right. But there's so much more
that they could have
been pulled out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I think over three movies that really leaves a gaping hole for me. And I think that's part of the reason why the movies don't hit as hard for me as it does for other people. Got it. Because there's a lot of cultural signifiers that I don't necessarily get.
Got it.
That other folks do get.
Good point.
And I kind of don't buy that, you know, Quill has, on his several visits to Earth since, not picked up some more MP3s.
Hey, he got Florence.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Right at the end of the movie, Florence. We know he gets Florence. More.
Right, he got some more.
I mean, Kevin Bacon probably brought some with him.
That's true, too. I forgot about the Christmas
Well,
special.
Yeah. Kevin brought him. Yeah, exactly. And we open with Rocket with the acoustic version of Creep. So,
of Creep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not just about his mother's music anymore, but it's about music in general. And he's got the new...
In general, and telling the story that he, you know, that Gunn wants to tell. So yeah, that's a little bit of a sore point for me.
I think it's...
Going back to
let's keep going on the music thing for a second, too. Because go ahead. Music is interesting in visual medium and television and movies because the music gives us the cue of how to feel about something. It often is the thing that sets the context for our emotions to be able to come in. If it's a creepy scene, they're going to give us creepy music. Mm. If it's uplifting, hey, we're going to go kick some ass and beat the bad guy, we're going to have uplifting music. I think both diegetic, you know, music in the universe as well as the I don't know what they call outside of the soundtrack. I don't know.
Exegetic.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's a title for it. What's interesting, I think, about Guardians is that they play with that. So the music cues that we're getting as diegetic music are also the soundtrack music, which are cueing our emotional responses to the scene simultaneously. Mm. And in some TV shows and movies, they'll do that a little bit. There might be one song that they'll play with, but in this, the whole setup for the Guardians structure is the music that the characters are listening to is our emotional cues as well, so that we're feeling the same things that they're feeling.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. That does make sense.
Everybody's quiet.
I'm
trying to see if I can have a counterpoint to that, but it does make sense.
All right, so let's get back to some terrible, horrible animal cruelty. John, is anything about the animal, the evil Tim Burton stuff get you there, or?
Oh yeah. You know, I'm not a heartless monster. You know, the cage scenes were terrible. Mm. To, you know,
did that play in? It work for you in terms of Rocket's backstory? And I guess we can kind of sideways into Rocket's backstory. It did.
It shows you why, you know, Rocket is the way that he is. Kind of.
Yeah, clearly.
You know what I mean? This sarcastic, you know, wisecracking, wise-ass, jaded, tough, you know,
And now we know.
Hard to trust.
And now we know he's a raccoon.
We know he's a raccoon, but also now we know why he has such an interest in prosthetic parts.
Good call.
Yes, that's right.
Good pick.
That's right. Give me the arm. I want the arm. That's right.
John, did the Rocket's backstory and the whole animal stuff work on you at all? Is that one place where the film might have got you a bit, or...
I think that was the best made part of the film. Mm. I thought that was the one that emotionally gripped me the most, because they gave me who these characters were from start to end. I didn't need to watch 32 other movies to figure out who they were. Right. And so, you know, I got a little sea otter who's very cute. And, you know, sea otters are one of my favorite aquatic mammals. And, yeah, you know, it got me.
I think technically it's a river otter, but, you know, we can quibble.
Well, I don't care anymore. But the I will say one of the things where, you know, I said in the non-spoiler section, there was a line that I said in my head before it happened that was, but not yet. She sends him back, she's going to say, but not yet. She's going to say, but not yet. And I was like, oh, when that happened, I was like, cringe. Where, I mean, you know, I've heard other people say this too. It's not an original thought really, but it's basically the Harry Potter scene with Dumbledore when Harry, I guess if you haven't seen this movie in 20 years, skip ahead 30 seconds when, you know, Harry is like in between life and death and talking to Dumbledore in King's Cross Station. It's the same scene, right? It's okay. You can come with me or you can go back and you have some more to do on the world.
It's true, but it's also, ties into, I mean, and I guess this is something that you pick up on more if you're all caught up in the MCU, but they've been exploring a lot the notion of the afterlife. And I have a feeling that we're going to see that come back, you know, in terms of tying these together and revisiting some characters.
Absolutely.
Well, and the not dead yet thing, that's a trope that's been around quite a lot and used in a lot of places. And
how many bucks do you think they have to throw at Robert Downey Jr. to get him to show up at King's Cross Station?
Easy, John. Easy.
I mean, I think they're probably already talking to him about Secret Wars.
So the segueing over and then into the High Evolutionary, Alicia, what did you know the High Evolutionary from? I can't remember how much you've read the comics or not.
I mean, for the Guardians comics, I have to say, like, so my comics history with Marvel is like mostly X-Men and X-Men and the Midnight Sun stuff, you know, on the horror side, like Man-Thing and stuff too. But yeah, after watching the first movie, and then I was like, oh, okay, I'm actually more curious about this group. So I've read a few, but definitely not as, I think, John, you've read a lot of these Guardians comics.
Yeah, I have. I think I'm kind of split on the portrayal of the character. The thing that I didn't like was that he was so rational, but then brought down by his emotions in such a way that, you know, and you'll never get the characters that you got, that you read in the comic books. That's something that's not ever going to happen anymore, right? So the way that they're portrayed in comics is not going to be the way they're portrayed in film. And that's cool. But I just didn't feel like, for someone who was so smart, so intelligent, so, you know, looked upon as he's the high evolutionary, you know, to be laid low by his creation.
I loved that. Not, though. Honest,
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. I just didn't think it's true to the character.
I mean, in this case, he's like Frankenstein. And I know I am interested, since they didn't kill him, what they're going to do with him in terms of more stories from the comics, whether there's any sort of redemption arc in his future. But I thought that he is definitely in my top 10 of MCU villains, maybe even top 5 at this point. I just thought that he was very effectively spooky. And maybe a lot of that is, you know, just the animal scenes. They got me so invested in the animals when he's treating them horribly, and when he just, we're in the spoiler section, when he just shoots them. Oh my God. Right. Like this is a incinerates them. Yeah. And also I have to give another quick makeup shout out to when we see his, you know, how Rocket tore off his face and then they peel off that like outer layer. Woo.
Oh yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
That was great.
Well, they kept teasing the face-off thing too with Quill, saying like, "Oh, it's not a trap if it's a, you know, it's a face-off."
Yeah, right.
Like, okay, right. Here it comes. Yeah. So. Right. I, as I said at the top, I don't enjoy the screaming villain who is laid low and, you know, and tripped up by their own sort of emotional response to things. I was really expecting for the High Evolutionary to be more cool, more calculated, more insightful. And so I was kind of sad because I think Chukwudi Ugwuje is a great actor and he was great for this role. And I just wish that they had dialed him down a little bit, like take him down a notch or two. You know, I do like the idea of the creation, you know, usurping its creator. That's a very human story, right? You know, if what would happen if we ever met a cosmic maker of our own race? I don't know if we'd treat them very well. But of course, Rocket wasn't treated very well either. So, yeah. John, any thoughts on the High Evolutionary?
I really like Dennis the Eugenicist. You know, I thought he was
Dennis the Eugenicist. Sorry,
a cool character.
Where's a soundboard to put in a little sound?
No, I mean, look, I really appreciated that after Endgame, after these, you know, multiverse things where you got Kang and you got I didn't even watch it, but I know that it's a big deal. These are like universe ending villains who want to like completely destroy everything or completely change everything. And this guy's like, no, I just want my little planet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a smaller stakes thing. It was a lot more personal. I really appreciated that. Even if you didn't like the villain, I think that we can be thankful that they didn't try to one up Thanos again.
Right.
Definitely. Not yet. Definitely. I think that's a great point. That's a great point.
Did anybody how did everybody else feel about the children, this sort of, extra? Did they have a name?
That's Star Children, I think they
Star Children.
Them.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
Well, yeah. Well, so we have to. So yeah. One of them. I mean, I guess we'll right. talk about this more in the in the credit scene. But yeah, Phyla is
a new right.
Well, yeah. So the girl at the end in the credit scene, that's a character from the comics. So I'm she didn't do much in the movie. She looks cool in the credit scene, but I'm more excited about what's going to come out of her being
there. Our future.
Mm. Especially, they changed everything about her backstory. But you have to assume she's going to still... she's actually in the comic, she's the daughter of the original Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. And actually I have to point out that her mom's name is Elysius. So it's like spelled exactly like my name, but with a US.
Very cool.
But yeah, so you have to wonder, like, is she eventually going to have some ties on the, you know, Marvel side of things? Probably not in the this movie coming now, but you know, since they're starting her out so young, maybe in the next phase. And then also the big thing is in the comics, she is the partner of a character named Moondragon, and like Moondragon is this like beautiful, bald, brainy, bisexual badass, and she is, a lot of people are waiting for her to come. So when people see Phyla show up, we're like, ooh, it's Moondragon coming, probably in the next phase also.
Well, that's
that was a lot of bees. Yeah. Beautiful, bald, brainy,
ultra
bisexual
badass.
Like, yeah. Well, that's a lot of bees.
Good segue a little bit there, or something that I didn't have on our notes for the outline is, what are some of the characters that they have introduced in Guardians 3 that we should be looking out for? Obviously, we have a whole new Guardians team. Did I miss anyone? Was there anyone else that that they were seeding for us for other properties?
I haven't done the deep dive into the rewatch, obviously, to see where the Easter eggs are hidden.
Okay.
To see which characters they are hinting at, but like Phyla is a big deal.
Yeah,
right. She's a big deal. Adam Warlock, he's a big deal.
Okay,
like,
you know what, like, he reminds me of.
Yes,
is, you guys watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? I know David doesn't.
I've watched five seasons.
I've watched it before.
You know Dee's boyfriend from the military who's so stupid and he's just like, I'm a lizard. He's just...
I might not have gotten that far.
That's who he reminds me of.
Dear listeners, you can't see him. Jean is cracking up.
He's... Well, this is the thing with Adam Warlock. The when he's introducing the comics, right, he's like a, just like he is in this movie, he's like a big man baby. He has no idea what's right, what's wrong. He has no sense of anything. He's just, you know, a blank slate, which is exactly what you get in this movie. This is, you know, a character who doesn't, the only thing that he did on his own was to save Peter Quill, right? That's his first act of autonomy. Right. The first time he displayed it. And that's what it is in the comics, right? He goes off, he's born, he's hatched out of this egg, and then he goes off into the universe to figure out what I am, right? What is my role here? And I think that's what you're kind of getting in this movie, for him to figure out in the future what his role is. And in the comics, when he shows up, it's like things are really bad. Like, oh, Adam Warlock is here. Oh, man, what the hell? You know, it's like things are drastic when that guy shows up.
You know it's bad when he shows up.
Yeah, that's the kind of character that he is. So it's like, oh, when they introduce him in the MCU, and I hope they don't neuter him down. I hope they don't, you know, water it down. Okay. I hope they don't, you know, make him less than what he was in the books to an extent. But again, he's a character that you have to keep your eye on, because in the next few phases, we're going to be in a lot of the cosmic aspect of Marvel.
Where would we rank Adam and Carol Danvers? Are they on a similar power scale, on a similar power curve? He seemed to have he can fly through space and do all this stuff.
In the MCU?
Yeah. Like in these movies now, are we going to put them at a similar power ranking? From abilities?
I think Carol is the strongest character in the MCU.
Period.
But I think he's getting close. But he's also they talked about, Aisha, his mother, talked about that the High Evolutionary interrupted his development. So that's why he comes out acting as sort of like a man-child. I think we should think that when we see him in future projects, I'm thinking maybe he'll show up in Nova or things like that. I think we're going to see a lot of growth from him into the version that people love from the comics.
But Captain Marvel is the most powerful, probably.
Yeah. Okay. She's a top dog. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
For now.
So far.
For
now.
Yeah. I missed it in the movie. What happened to his mother?
She died on that planet.
Yeah, she died.
She died on...
She was on the planet that got blown up.
The counter.
A nonchalant genocide that happened in the middle of the movie.
That was also... It was like, we were just in this woman's house, and you're not going to help her?
Right.
I saw the pictures and everything. I'm like, oh, come on. This is...
Yeah.
Can we talk about this New Earth nonsense?
Counter Earth? Yeah. Oh, man.
That was the weakest part of the movie to me.
It looked like a pretty hip place, no?
Yeah. I mean, that was one for the comic book fans.
Absolutely.
If I'm the High Evolutionary and I'm trying to create a high society and I'm trying to get rid of the flaws of Earth, why would I design it the exact same way? Why would I give you the same house, the same plots of property, the same jobs, the same cars?
The same drug dealing?
I was just like, I don't understand why. Like, I understand that part of it is he can't get the formula to the people right. But part of it must be, you know, people are not just their genetics. They're also their circumstances. You're putting them in the same situation, you're going to get similar results. I did not understand that.
I wish we got that story.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things at play there. I think that, first of all, you know, just in general, humans tend to not be like as creative as we think that we are. You know, when we try to come up with, like, even in the science side of things, when we try to imagine new worlds, it's hard for us to imagine a world that's habitable that doesn't look just like ours. And I think also, we have this intense hubris of where the High Evolutionary, we learn based on his juxtaposition with Rocket, that he thinks he's smarter than he is.
And think, is the High Evolutionary a human being as well? Is he a human species?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Yes. So he's sort of trapped
It's not. It's not explained. It's not explained in the movie, but yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. And from a plot standpoint, did you guys feel like there's been a couple comments. Folks have made a couple comments about the length of it. I kind of felt like there was one too many MacGuffin hunts. Like, did we need three of them? Did we really need to jump from one to the other? And the scene of him cutting out the computer from the guy's head, that was pretty brutal. Like, that was a pretty low point for me.
Yeah, that was...
I mean, I think in general, they could have cut out, you know, half an hour or 20 minutes from... Mm-hmm.
An hour.
No.
Let's just do it.
No,
I'm going on a side rant here. You know what? We have lost the art of the 90-minute movie.
Oh,
see
what happened to the 90-minute movie.
Watch
you sit down, you get your popcorn. You don't even get to finish it by the end of it. I want more short movies. I want more. You know what? It's not even short. That's a normal length movie. If you go to the movie in 1995, chances are the movie's 90 minutes. Bring it back.
That's why I appreciate that they're doing, you know, these special presentations like Werewolf by Night, like they did the holiday special, and like Nova's coming up apparently. And yeah, these are like about an hour long, and especially with Werewolf by Night, you know, you just see that the fact they're capable of telling a full, complete, complex story within that time. It just makes it doubly impressive than a movie right. three times yeah. that length.
I think streaming has improved TV on that end, whereas I think that people expect the story to be whatever length it needs to be now. Right. If it's a super long story, if it's Stranger Things and they want to have an hour and a half episode, sure, do it. You know, The Last of Us episode one, sure, do it. 90 minutes. But if it's Barry and you got a 25 minute story to tell, tell it in 25 minutes. And I don't think that has translated to movies yet. I don't think they've learned that lesson yet. Instead, they want to just not pay the writers to write super long movies.
Yes. Go WGA.
Yeah. As we record this, what are we in week two of the strike? So our hearts, yes. You know, yeah. We got to think of all of those writers out there on the picket lines right now. So
as a writer who works in other industries, we don't have those unions to fight for us. So we're kind of all looking toward what's going on with the screenwriters and hoping that they can set standards, because we're all being affected by the same issues with, you know, changing norms and AI and all that.
And I think this strike typifies, I think it's the largest strike that we're seeing of this tension between labor and capital. I think it is indicative of a much larger issue. On that note, though, we should probably take a quick break. And when we come back, let's wrap up. Let's talk a little bit about the legacy of Guardians of the Galaxy, and then touch on any last minute character arcs that we got a lot of characters in this. We haven't talked about a bunch of them, so we can do a quick round robin on those. And we'll do that right when we get back from this break. And we're back. Okay, so this is James Gunn's MCU farewell. Alicia, as the champion for our film here, do you feel that this was a good send-off? Was this James Gunn giving us a big wave? And a lot of fans are very happy with this film. And I'm happy that they're happy. Do you feel like that this served for him to step out?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like it satisfyingly wrapped up this movie trilogy. Mm-hmm. But also, I do have to say, it felt like sometimes like a half audition for, you know, DC in terms of like the darker
He'd
tone.
He'd be smart and, to do know, it, right?
Yeah.
He'd be I mean, smart
I,
to play
I,
it.
For me, it kind of, I was like, oh yeah, I can see, you know, you're letting a little bit of that, you know, darker Batman side in there.
Right.
I'm surprised when, you know, they're asking Rocket, who are you? He didn't go, Justice.
I am the Batman. I am the raccoon.
I mean, you know, James Gunn and Kevin Feige have joked / seem kind of serious in maybe like a decade's time, we might have a Marvel DC crossover. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I think it's a fair call, though, to have two of these IP managers, I'm not really sure what we call them, our overlords, our IP overlords, to have
super showrunners, yeah, show,
you know, to have had this common experience in working together, because I do think at one level yeah, they're in competition with each other, but on another level, if the industry as a whole, if the storytelling is better, if the CGI is better, you know, are we getting better entertained? I don't know if I can say it that way. I think that's a fair thing, and I'm glad that maybe there's some friendly competition between these guys, because they're not the studio heads, they're the section heads of this IPs. I don't know, John, what do you think about James Gunn's legacy and his move over to DC?
James Gunn on a personal level is iffy. It's more so than Chris Pratt. You know, Chris Pratt I can get annoyed at, but James Gunn actually did some like messed up stuff a few years ago, and remember he got fired from this film and then rehired. It was a whole thing. As far as the movies he makes, I generally like them. I think he generally does a really good job. I don't know what it is about the the DCEU that they just cannot get right. It's DCU now. It's not DCEU now. Shut up with your stupid acronyms. Enough of the views.
I mean, the drop, it's less one E and less one Zack Snyder, basically.
You're right.
Okay. I love DC Comics. I actually would say I've read more and I've enjoyed more DC Comics than Marvel Comics.
Oh, okay.
And I wish that I had a cinematic universe that actually did anything right. And unfortunately, other than the Christian Bale Batman movies and the Joker movie, I don't think that any of these movies have been good in the last 20 years.
Right. You didn't like the latest, you didn't like James Gunn's Suicide Squad?
I didn't watch that actually, so maybe I should. I didn't love it, but I did enjoy the Robert Pattinson Batman.
Okay. So
I like that.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that you were a more of a DC than a Marvel person, John. So
I got at my mom's house, I've got a pile of comics of the DC comics I was reading for a while.
So your dark side here showing itself.
Yes. Maybe that's why I'm here, like shitting on the movies. I'm pulling for the DCU.
That's right. Yeah. You're sandbagging it. Jean, what's your take on the Gunn legacy?
I mean, he gave a blueprint, I think, to how, you know, you can have this humorous take on this, you know, fantastical world that we're in, right? Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not the biggest Guardians fan, but this is undeniable that he's brought a lot more people to the screens with his portrayals, with his movies. At the end of the day, that's a great thing.
Right.
Like, whether I enjoy them, whether they're my favorite, whether they're not my favorite, it doesn't matter. It's just a lot more eyes on these properties, a lot more people talking about, you know, these properties.
Right.
And hopefully a lot more filmmakers wanting to make these movies, you know, because I think that's what we all kind of want. And he did a great... He segued away from what the MCU was doing and show that you can tell these stories in a different way.
Right. Do you think that this particular movie itself, how much of this movie was a love letter to Marvel fans, and how much is it open to a general audience? You coming from a very insider standpoint, having a deep knowledge of the comic books, do you think that somebody who's just a superficial fan would have enjoyed this movie? Maybe not as much, but was there enough in the movie for them to hook into it? Or was this really a movie directed at the fans and the deep fans?
This was a movie directed at the fans.
Okay.
I think the biggest problem on that front is that, you know, it relied so much on the story. As John was saying, you know, he didn't know that Gamora had returned. It relies so much on the story that played out in other movies like Infinity War. And that's where it becomes tricky, because the first two films, you could watch them on their own and not have to have seen anything else. And this one is more demanding.
Definitely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to. It was for the fans.
Right.
It was for the fans. It was for the fandom of, you know, the Peter Quill fans, the Rocket fans.
Right.
You know, it was for the Guardian fans. It was for those guys and gals who really, you know, enjoy these characters and wanted to see them go off on a good note. So yeah, I don't think someone just dropping in on this third movie mm-hmm. is necessarily going to find the joy that people who've watched these characters since what, 2014?
Right.
Right. Was the first movie, I think.
Yeah. I know, we'd have to check it.
Yeah. But you're not going to feel this. I don't think the movie was going to make you feel what the people who are invested in these characters felt.
And that's what I was kind of wondering too, was with the positive, because a lot of folks who are very positive about this film are super positive about this film. So, and is that that super positivity part and parcel of the nostalgia and the, yeah, this particular chapter is coming to an end. This particular director is moving on. This is the end of it as we know it. Are we, there's a phrase for this and I can't remember, but are we just sort of locked into this because this is in the moment? And so we're
zeitgeist.
Yeah, we're elevating this because it's this moment, as opposed to, does this film stand on its own from a technical standpoint?
Well, I got feedback from my friends. So I have a group of friends here who are big movie fans, but not big Marvel fans. So that's why I don't take them with me anymore. But yeah. they went to see it also, and their feedback for the most part seemed to be, like, they usually like more of the prestige films more than the, you know, mm-hmm. Comic book films.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But this one, yeah, it felt like it was a little bit long in the middle, but overall it seemed to be more positive than other Marvel films.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, interesting. All right. So it does have some legs then in terms of its storytelling chops, its plot
right.
and everything like that. Okay. Well, that's,
yeah, I think the heavy emotional angle. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what does this mean? What does this movie mean for the MCU going forward? Has it secured a legacy or has it damaged a legacy? I mean, we know where John is kind of standing. He's praying for the DCU. But for the MCU fans, is this a harbinger of good tidings or is this a harbinger of woe?
It's hard to call it a harbinger when it feels like...
Sorry, am I using harbinger the right
way? No, you are. But it feels more like a postscript, you know? Like, mm-hmm. even though it's one of the first two movies in Phase 5, it still feels like it's wrapping up the story before so that the next stories can unfold.
Clearing the way, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Agree.
Yeah.
Agree.
Question, did Groot speak our language? Or are we now part of the family so that we can understand his language?
Definitely
we're
the
part
latter.
Of the family.
Yeah. Okay, so we're now part of the family.
Yeah,
got it.
We're part of the family.
Okay. Post-credit scenes. What did they mean? What do we take for obviously the mid-roll with Rocket and the new team introduction there? I think that one's a pretty one easy to parse, but the end credit scene was a little bit confusing to me. What is everyone's opinions? John, let's start with you since you're probably not going to see the next Star-Lord movie.
All right. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I watched the mid-credit scene.
And walked out.
And you're done.
It was fine. Well, I really had to use the bathroom and I just decided. Everybody's sitting there staring at it and everybody seemed happy. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And I just didn't go back. So I don't know what happened at the end. I think I looked it up, but I already forgot. But I did see the mid-credit scene.
It was Peter Quill eating some cereal with his grandfather.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I read about that. Yeah. Was there anything meaningful about
that's
it
that's the
all?
Question, I guess, for Alicia and Jean is what do you guys take away from Quill's choice in cereal?
Well, the most meaningful part, I think, is the, you know, the what credit that rolled on the screen where it said the legendary Star-Lord shall return. I know Jean knows a bit more about those comics, the legendary Star-Lord comics, but.
Yeah. So, you know, that was a few years ago. He had a run, a solo comic run, the legendary Star-Lord. So I think that's, you know, fitting way to end the movie to end everything by saying that, because now he is on his own. And if he comes back as a character, it might be in that capacity where he's figuring out this Earth stuff by himself, right? An interesting note is that, and I think I mentioned this yesterday when we were chatting, is that in, we know Secret Wars is coming down the line for Marvel, but in that buildup and in that comic run, Star-Lord did have a comic in conjunction with Kitty Pryde, who's an X-Men. So there, we already know that him and Gamora are, you know, they're done, right? Okay. So potentially there could be something else in store for him along those sorts of romantic lines. And it will be interesting to see if they actually try to pull those things together.
So do you think that they're going to bring Star-Lord and Nebula together? I got that feeling, not just from the whole thing about like him flirting with her in front of Gamora, which awkward, but but especially at the beginning of the movie when she was like kind of taking care of, you know, his drunk ass. And then it seems like, you know, he starts talking about Gamora, and I got the feeling that she was like a little bit like, oh, okay, about my sister again, you know, and it felt like maybe they were setting up some romance for them later down the road.
Yeah, I was definitely reading those vibes. He like looked over at her at one point, and she's like, "Don't look at me that way."
Yeah, I didn't feel that.
Okay. No,
I don't feel that. I think Nebula is too much of a badass for Peter,
especially in this movie.
Especially in this movie,
right. Yeah.
Especially as she's portrayed in the MCU, I don't think she would, you know, have much patience for Peter Quill.
Now, Ryan Airy from Screen Crush had a good suggestion. He was saying it should be like a stoner comedy with Peter Quill on Earth. I was like, sign me up.
That would work.
I mean, him and Thor, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that would be funny.
On a road trip somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of come to wrap up here, I wanted to make sure that we did spend some time with some of the other characters that we haven't talked about. Anybody else have anything on Rocket or Quill? I think we've covered them pretty well. Gamora?
I don't think so.
Yeah, Gamora and Nebula, we hardly touched on in this, except for just now. I thought...
Your eyes are so black. That was a good laugh out loud for me.
I thought you were talking to me just now. I was like, what?
That's what I thought.
No.
Gamora.
Gamora.
Oh, my God.
Nebula.
It was like my father ripped me apart or whatever, put me back together. Like, he chose my eyes. Oh, but he picked pretty ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her arm upgrade is pretty
insufferable. The guy's insufferable.
Yeah.
He's insufferable.
I was thinking, like, during this film, I was like, is Nebula my new favorite guardian?
I think so. I'm in for Team Nebula here. And Gamora, I was a little confused too. I didn't realize, I've been out of sync with that main story or that part of the storyline for a while, and I wasn't expecting her to be there. Oh, wait, sorry. I have one other little subtopic. What the hell was Sylvester Stallone doing in this movie?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him.
You remember him from, was it the second one, the second movie where the Ravengers?
Yeah.
He was.
Was that a continuation thing? Okay. All right. I got it.
I forgot he was in this franchise, though, and I was like, is that Sylvester Stallone? Like, it's just so weird, because Sylvester Stallone is an actor that I've only ever really watched with my grandpa as a kid.
Okay, all right, let's get into the old man movie thing here, John. old here?
And no, really, though, like that's the only experience I've had hilarious. With Sylvester Stallone, and then he's in this movie, and I'm like, what the hell is happening?
He's the Ravager.
Yeah. All right, so that's continuity thing then. He was already there. Okay, got it. And where are we with Gamora in terms of her place in the universe or her place in the story?
I loved her story in this.
Yeah, I'm so glad I'm so glad they didn't get her back together with Peter.
Yeah.
She had a happy ending, and I was so happy for her.
Good.
One of my favorite moments was the whole bit about the colors of the comm. And you're on an open channel, Peter. And he's like, no, blue is for green. What I don't remember the colors, but
who's on first just, stick? Yeah.
And Drax, it's intuitive. It was very funny. Very funny. Yeah.
Speaking of Drax, I totally loved her.
Yeah, I love that she had that she was a different person now, and they made that clear. You know that.
Yeah.
Different experiences, and that's made her someone else.
I don't know that they did anything differently with her costuming or her makeup. There were scenes where I don't think I had the realization of, have I ever seen this actress before? Because the physicality that her portrayal had, that she was carrying, was as, this is a different person. This is no longer the Gamora that we knew. And I thought that that worked really well. And the actor completely played that off for me. So I was pretty happy with Gamora's storyline.
Yeah, I'm sad she's leaving the MCU.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do hope they recast as she suggested.
Drax, we just mentioned him. I don't remember leaving the film having a clear understanding of where he's going or what he's up to.
He's
gonna be a dad on Nowhere, right?
Yeah.
I did like the whole. You know, I think everybody thinks he's stupid, and then he knew the language. That was good. You know, he's always been meant to be a dad. I think that was right. I think that was a good ending for him. One of the better character arcs in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's funny. When the language, and he's like, well, you didn't ask.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I got to give it to Dave Bautista. He has really improved as an actor since the first movie.
Absolutely.
I did not even, because the first movie you're like, this is a wrestler acting. You know, the second one, he's a little better. This one, I think he really has hit his stride as an actor.
Yeah. I agree. His character, I mean, this was the first time I felt like they got closer to Drax being a really, you know, like powerful character, just like strength wise. And I appreciated that. But the one thing I didn't appreciate, what's kind of creepy to me, was when Mantis, you know, used her powers on him and said, you're happy.
Mm.
Right? And in that moment, I'm like, how many times has she done this to this guy? You know, like what is going on here? This is so, and it was so nonchalant. Like,
do you watch The Umbrella Academy?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
There's a character who has that power, and that's like a major question of morality throughout. Yeah.
So that gives me really creepy vibes about where Mantis is headed. Like,
and she's like, I look like a bug, so you're not going to question me.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, oh no, you're happy. And then, wow, that was one of the most powerful scenes for me.
I kind of wish I could, I would like to watch this movie again at home, you know, on my laptop or whatever, so I could sort of stop and take some notes, because I do feel that there are some deeper cuts here.
There's some things there. There are some things there. So when she left with those creatures to go find herself, I'm like, you know, what is she going to find? Because what she's done to Drax, man, that's not cool. That's not heroic at all.
I'm not feeling making that. Someone fall in love with Drax too. Remember that one?
That was a lot of emotional manipulation.
Funny.
But it was
a good laugh. Yeah.
But it is notable that in the last movie, you know, he was all the time just like calling her ugly and all this horrible stuff.
Yeah,
but you know, he got away with it because he just Drax. And then this one, she basically, in the same tone that he called her ugly, she called him stupid. And then she's like, wait, that actually hurt him. Erase. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
The Guardians vibe.
It's not her first erasure.
No, it's not.
But I know it's that much. It's not her first time.
The Guardians vibe is of this bickering family. Did you guys feel that the bickering was at the right level? Too much? Too little? I was a few times. I was kind of like, okay, this is enough bickering. Enough sort of shouty, crosstalky stuff. Can we move on with the plot? And maybe that's just, you know, for a farewell, you know, song for Gunn and for the diehard MC or Guardians fans, that was acceptable. I don't know.
The only bickering I enjoyed was with Cosmo and why can't I remember his name?
Craiglin.
Thank you. That's the only bickering I enjoy.
Okay.
Bad dog.
Cosmo's a good dog.
Yeah. I was there for that. That hit me. I was like, okay, yeah.
I didn't enjoy that joke at first, but the payoff worked.
Yeah. Right.
The payoff worked. That's what I'm saying. It was a long time coming. It was a long time coming.
That was the one that actually really annoyed me, even to the end. I was like, oh, all right, he's going to call him a good dog at a critical moment.
And he did.
And so it's going to be. And that and the whole whistle thing, the
learning,
I was
power.
Like, oh, yeah. Good. He's succeeding with the object he failed in the beginning. Right. You know, it was very like,
it was
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, a lot of people, it seems like, didn't remember that Cosmo was in the previous films, that Cosmo started as one of the collector's items, you know, the Benicio del Toro character.
Right.
And then when Nowhere was destroyed, we saw her at the end that she survived. And then, yeah, obviously we saw her more in the holiday special now here. But some people are like, where did this character come from?
I think, too, we should make mention of Nowhere as a kind of character, just as a city can be a character in another film or something like that. Nowhere seemed to have a place among the characters here to the extent that it can travel and fight,
and,
you know, like a giant
and
battle.
It's now here.
It's no more Nowhere.
Hidden in its eye.
Yeah.
There's a big gun hidden in its eye. Yeah.
Was that a surprise to you, Jean?
Yes, it was.
So that's a movie only thing.
I don't remember that being a part of the comics. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah. Shooting this massive
cannon,
gun.
Yeah, it felt
I presume that Rocket built it. I'm presuming that Rocket built
the
eye cannon.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really cool. It was really great. And that's another, you know, call to him taking down, you know, High Evolutionary.
Right.
You know, with his own invention.
Right. Any other characters that we missed? I think that's about it.
I think that's all for me. I mean, I'm happy with that discussion. This was a nice long discussion. I think we hit a lot of good points. I think we laughed, we cried. We got down.
We talked about crying.
We talked about crying. Yeah, I guess the movie didn't move any of us. Actually, no. I'm sorry, Alicia. You said it moved you to tears.
It did move me to tears. Yes.
It did.
Okay.
It did.
Well, you can cry for all of us then.
All right. Well, I think we should wrap it up from here. A quick shout out to our Patreon subscribers, our lore masters who help keep our Nowhere, our giant spaceship of Nowhere, moving forward. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Lavinia T, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, and DJ Miwa. Thank you all so very much for being subscribers. We appreciate all of our Patreon subscribers. And thank you very much for continuing to support us. We are on a membership drive. I'm going to do my little NPR National Public Radio subscriber shtick here. We want to hit 100 subscribers by the end of July. July 11th is our birthday. I'm in the middle of designing a special commemorative Lorehounds sticker. It's going to have some handwritten Elvish language inscriptions underneath our main logo. And everyone who is a subscriber at the end of July is going to get sent one of these as a thank you gift. And the only way you can get one of these is to have been a subscriber with us at the end of July. So you could, you know, subscribe right at the end of July and you'll still get one of these. So it would mean a lot for us and it would really propel us sort of into the next level of production for us. Quick programming notes. Alicia, we'll shift dust.
Woohoo.
You are taking off with some real rocket boosters here. It seems to be going well. How's how are you enjoying the ride so far?
Yeah, I mean, this is, like I've said a lot of times, it's a series of books I've been really passionately evangelical about.
Uh-huh.
And so you worry then when there's an adaptation coming, like, is this going to let me down? And two episodes in so far, third one comes out, it's probably out by the time we...
It's out now. I got a notification.
I've also spoken to people who have seen the entire season, and it's just, it's a great adaptation, and I'm very excited to see how all of the new people to the fandom, you know, respond to this story. So, and it's, I love the opportunity to break it all down.
Great. Well, that show is on Apple TV and your podcast has just moved over into the Lorehounds. production Hooray. Platform. So welcome, and we're excited to have you, and we're excited to hopefully we can get a chance to jump onto your show and talk a little bit about this new cool new show. All right, for the rest of May, we have some short form coverage of Barry, White House Plumbers, and Ted Lasso. Weirdly enough, they're all ending the same at the same time, basically, the last week of May. But look for those on our main feeds. If you're a Patreon subscriber, be on the lookout for our next Second Breakfast episode, which will be coming out shortly. We have our next installment of the Earthsea trilogy quadrilogy. We're probably going to go all four books with Marilyn Arpukila. We're reading Tombs of Atuan. And that should be out in a couple of weeks. A lot of positive feedback for the podcast and for the books. A lot of folks have not heard of Ursula K. Le Guin before and are discovering her and are really enjoying reading what she wrote. And so if you're interested at all, join us for there. The MCU universe, this podcast is going to assemble again at the end of the month for a preview of the new Sony Studios Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Jean, what's your take on that? Are you excited for that movie?
I am. The first movie was awesome.
Okay.
The animation, from what I've seen so far from the trailers, looks
amazing.
Yeah. So I'm sure the story. I'm hopeful that the story then will follow suit.
Great.
So yeah,
it'll be miles ahead of its time.
Oh, Sean. you've officially you know not only having two children, John, but you telling bad jokes. You have officially entered into the dad-dom fraternity. So welcome.
Thank you. I'll wear my medal for the rest of the day.
And I think we've got Secret Invasion coming up in June. Yes. Jean, you and I still have to work out our plans for that, but we'll have a couple of MCU. Episodes out in the meantime, certainly with Spider-Man and maybe some prep for Secret Invasion. We'll see. Otherwise, thank you everyone for joining us and for hanging in there for this podcast. Alicia, thanks for staying up late because you're on a different time zone.
No, yes.
John,
I'm going to go watch Silo now.
No, yeah. Excellent. John, thanks for entertaining us with your bad dad jokes.
I had fun. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome back anytime. Yeah.
This was great. This was great.
And Jean,
I don't know if I'm going to come back for another MC universe, but maybe write in if you want my sarcasm again.
Jean, any final thoughts?
No, Peter Quill's still alive.
Fair enough. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you on the next MC universe. Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.